Blog Talk Radio. The views and comments expressed do not reflect the opinions of eWater Radio. All comments and views are show guest views and comments and in no way reflect views or comments of eWater Radio, KEWR, DB, or its affiliates.
Yes, happy Sunday. I feel like that was appropriate to play for this show. I am so excited. Welcome to So What's the Point with Destiny Williams. I have an amazing show set up for you. Mr. Randall is on, the manager of the late, great Rudy Ray Moore. I cannot tell you how excited I am. We got a little bit of history going on. So I don't want to waste any time. I'm going to plug him in right now.
Hello.
My brother, are you here?
Of course. You know I'm in the house on time. Ain't no CP thing going on here. I'm on time. In fact,
you're on time. I've been waiting on you.
I've been waiting on you.
Okay, so listen. You waiting on me. Don't wait on me, honey, because this clock keeps ticking. And I have to tell you right now, I have been doing my Dolomite research all week. I feel like I was born in the wrong generation.
Why would you say that?
Because I needed to be born in the 70s.
Okay. I guess I can understand why you're actually saying that. But I want to hear from you, though.
Well, let me go through why I'm feeling like this. I'm going to go through the Dolomite album. Pimpin' Son, which I'm a pimp. Slap a Bitch If You Could. should I keep going? These albums are amazing, so I'm really looking forward to this interview, and I'm very honored to have you on the show, and I want to thank you.
You're welcome, my sister, and I'm glad that you're having me on your show. It's a mutual thing. It's going back and forth. It's going, you know, you to me to you back, you know, to talk about the legacy of the great Rudy Ray Moore and this film, as you know, that's in theaters right now.
Mm-hmm.
Dolomite Is My Name, starring Eddie Murphy. And, I mean, a cast that's out of sight and dynamite. I mean, you're talking
about... Yes, and by the way, it's not getting as much play as it should be, because we're talking about a legend right now.
Yes. Well, over social media, it is. It's only in limited theaters to the 25th. I mean, for those who are already subscribers of Netflix will definitely be subscribing when people tell them, I watched Dolomite Is My Name last night, and it's this great, wonderful film, and everybody's going to like, I got to subscribe to Netflix so I can watch this film. So it's in limited theaters.
Let's rewind really quick. Let's set it up really quick. So I have Donald Randall on the show, yes. And he has been a longtime friend of Rudy Ray Moore, a.k.a. Dolomite. And rest in peace, right? Rest in peace. Let's just say that. And you were his longtime manager. Now there's been a movie that has come out with Eddie Murphy starring in it. And, you know, we're here to, A, talk about that, and B, talk about you. So let's just set it up really quick because, I mean, you're a very important person.
Okay, the last thing I couldn't understand, the last words you said, I'm what again? I'm sorry?
Well, you're very important.
Oh, very important.
You were his manager for 20 years, right?
Over that. It was way over longer than that. But who's counting?
Who's counting?
All
right.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, it's been a long time repping Rudy. And the funny thing, you want to hear a funny story?
I do.
Okay, the funny story is this. Under 10 years old, I'm in South Central Los Angeles, right up the street from where Rudy lived at the Dunbar Hotel. I'm in my oldest brother's Randy's lowrider, giggling and laughing, listening to Rudy Ray Moore on 8-track. Now, you're talking about a kid under 10 years old, understanding what these people, what he and the other people are talking about, you know, Lady Reed, which is Queen Bee. And I'm just giggling, laughing. I remember that moment. I really remember that moment under 10. And then it's funny how we met, and it's another funny story how I began to represent him. And it's just a long, long story. So let me know where you want to start, my sister.
We can start from the beginning.
Okay.
So,
well,
I mean, tell us, you know, like, tell us the whole story, because when you and I first had a conversation about you coming on the show again, I went and did my homework about how he really represented the black community, how he really influenced everything and rap and everything. So let's start from there. Like, he's history.
Yes, he is, because when it comes to the rap part of it, Rudy did in the 70s what the rappers started doing in the 80s, selling his records out of the trunk of his car. And he started that in 1969, of course, when he recorded his first comedy album with that expensive language on it, you know, Eat Off More Often with Dolemite on it, the Dolemite joke. And as you know, a wino came into the record store where Rudy was working at, and he will recite that. And someone suggested, Theodore Tony suggested for Rudy to record that. And he did. And, of course, he sold it out of the record store, Dolphins of Hollywood, there in South Central, which is a few blocks from where I lived and from where Rudy lived, at the Dunbar Hotel, where Rudy lived and filmed all of his movies. And I stayed across the street of Central Avenue in 42nd Place there. And so anyway, as a kid, I had an audio video class. I was actually filming on Super 8 film. And I was just into, like, snapping pictures and shooting on Super 8 film. It just can't, the camera always been a thing of my life. It's who I am and always will be, because I'm still shooting on Super 8 film. Now I'm taking pictures. So I go outside one day, I'm looking at all these people, these cameras, lights, and this crew, and I'm approaching, I think, 13 at that time. I'm like, what is going on? And someone told me, you know, Rudy Ray Moore is shooting his movie, Pee Wee Weinstraw. And the next thing you know, they stop in traffic so they can get the scene set up. And I just start asking questions. And I think the first person I really believe I met from Rudy's crew at that time was Cliff Rockmore, which was the director and writer of Pee Wee Weinstraw, the Devil's Son-in-Law motion picture. So he saw something in me. Yeah, he saw something in me. And after that, I wanted to do a scene with Rudy. I mean, like, right there on the spot. And the scene was coming out of a soul food restaurant. The scene got cut, but anyway, I actually did a scene with Rudy Ray Moore coming. The scene is coming out of the soul food restaurant, and he's walking down the street with that tip cane changing the people
Can I cut you off really quick? I need to know what you were eating at the soul food restaurant. Were there black eyed peas and collard greens?
That is so funny. Of course you know that's what a soul food restaurant has. Of course.
Yes, move forward.
Come on, cornbread. Come on, some
really
chicken,
all
hot
day.
Chicken, mac and cheese. Come on now, hot sauce on the table. I mean, you know how
hot sauce
like,
on the table.
You know, come
That's
on,
true.
Now. Sweet tea, corn muffins. Don't forget about the corn muffins. No, we love our those corn muffins.
We won't forget about the corn muffins. So you were, I got it. So you were walking down the street, and what happened?
Oh, well, the scene Rudy and I was doing, us coming out of the soul food restaurant, and him having that pimp king. If you look at the movie Petey Wheatstraw or either the trailer, you will see that he's changing situations. Like he changed this guy that was cheating on his woman, and Rudy walked up to her. Her and ask him, what do you want me to do? She said, turn him into a dog, turn him into a puppy. And that's exactly what, you know, he did that magical thing with the king and changed the guy into a dog. And there was a XLR sister, you know, if you remember that scene, and she was like trying to get into a lawn chair and she's shaking. Rudy changed her to a thin woman. And the best scene of this particular era when he was doing that is my family and I was sitting on the front porch and right in front of our house. They got permission and everything. Rudy and the producers came and talked to my mom. We were sitting on the front porch and there was a struggling family with an old beat up car. They pushing this car down the street and that same thing, Rudy waving that magic wand and changed the car to a Cadillac Seville. So, and the good thing about that, my family and I was on the front porch, and it's like I was really getting involved into this movie, right? Then day two, I met Jimmy Lynch, the co-star of the movie, the guy that did a lot of the set decoration for Rudy's film, Rudy's best friend. He held Rudy down. And I said, you know, we're up the street in a vacant lot putting a make-believe graveyard together, actually digging a hole. And the scene was for Jimmy Lynch, this drunk guy wandering around in a graveyard and falling into the make believe grave. And Rudy does his scene, and it was just so funny to, you know, me not really understanding it all, but I saw how a film was putting together with just a crew of basically, you know, just doing anything to support Rudy, you know, because there was you can tell a lot of friends. And family and all that. So anyway, as that film wrapped and everything, then it was in that 20 Disco Godfather. I was there from A to Z when that was done. And I got the bug. I want to be a filmmaker, right? And unfortunately, that film was out of character for Rudy, you know, because he played, you know, like this detective cop guy named Tucker. It was all about Angel Dust, the Whack Attack, and all that kind of stuff. And he had this nephew named Bucky that was high, you know, on Angel Dust and all of that. So it kind of like took Rudy out of that whole Petey Wheatstraw, Dolomite character. And it kind of like hurt his career.
Wait, I got to pause you right here. I'm going to pause you for a second because I'm sorry. I binge watched all of his movies and they all kind of had an innuendo of trying to save the neighborhood. Like, oh, this is the crack epidemic. This is what Queen B. Remember, she got him out of jail. I binge watched it.
Absolutely.
Queen B. got him out of jail. Yeah. And then it was like a kind of thing where he was really trying to say to the neighborhood, like with the drugs and everything. But I kind of want to take a turn really quick with you about all that because all of his films were independently produced.
Yes, they were.
That's amazing that you were sitting across the street watching this amazing black man fund his own film.
With his own dollar and with his own hustles of the money that he you know, made on his party record, his comedy records. And he believed in himself. He wanted to be on that screen. He found the great writer, director, Jerry Jones, and he got introduced, you know, to to Jerry Jones through Jeannie Marie, which was one of Rudy's
friends
and writers.
I'm very curious. About where that money came from, though, to fund these films, because me watching these films, they look amazing for the 70s, right?
So absolutely.
It's like he's doing these independent films, and he's doing such an amazing job. Where did this money come from? The film, like, to do this?
It came from, he financed those movies through his record sales. That first album,
yeah,
often did very well. It sold, Rudy sold that thing out of his trunk. He sold it across the country until he made a distribution deal with Kent Records.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how that started. That's how he came up with the initial $90,000 to get that movie started, and he couldn't get it finished. He had to get a loan against his royalties from Kent Records, and he also had to go on the road after that to get it actually, you know, in post-production and everything. But what started it all is that the loan that he got from his auntie, and you'll see this in the film, he got a loan from his auntie from a bus accident. She loaned him a few hundred dollars to record that first album. I mean, 200 and some change went a long way to sell, you're talking about, you know, a million or two records. He actually, that first album, you know, more often did very well. I mean, Rudy did it on his own before he took it to Kent Records and got a distribution deal when they promoted it and marketed it and took it, you know, all the way. So Rudy was ahead of his game. Believed in himself.
Yeah.
Didn't take no for an answer. You're talking about a man who would not take no from an answer. But we have to go a little bit. Let's go back.
Let's talk about not taking no for an answer really quick. Let's talk about that.
Okay.
Because when I started, like, researching him, when, like, you know, and really doing, like, the due diligence, I found out that me and Rudy had the same birthday.
Oh, St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, it was like 3/17. And so we do not take no for an answer. The worst thing you can ever say to us is no. It's okay.
You guys got green on the brain, that's why.
Yeah, is that what it is?
You got green on the brain. It's like, I smell this green. And I'm talented, and I'm going to go get what I'm supposed to have, which is the way that you're supposed to live your life. Get what you're supposed to be, your purpose, and do your thing. Live your life. You only have one time to do it, so you might as well never give up. Just do your thing.
I heard you have a green suit on right now.
Well, no, I took it off. I was playing around with it. I was going to wear it.
You did it.
But actually, I got a event coming up where I'm going to wear that. I was just teasing y'all with that. I have an event that I'm going to wear that on, you know, coming up soon. But this is what I want to tell you because I think this is very important. And it's in the movie. Rudy was a rock and roll singer back in the 50s and 60s before he started doing comedy.
Yes.
You know,
honestly, before you get to that, let me play the clip, actually, of that.
Okay.
Because I have that of him talking about how he came to. And then, you know, that's, and by the way, these have never been heard. I mean, this is just such a blessing. So let me play that really quick, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about it.
Okay.
I was in pursuit of a career, wanted to do things, and it was so hard for me to get the system to do anything for me. I was lucky enough to make a movie, not make a movie, but a record. And it was an album in that period of time, in 1969, that hit solid for me. The album had a monologue on it called Dolomite. So Dolomite was such a lovable character. People all over the country loved that character. So then I said, well, where can I go from here? So the next thing I thought of was trying to get a screenplay written for the character Dolomite. So I give the writer, which wrote it for me, Mr. Jerry Jones, writer and play producer, he wrote me a screenplay for the character Dolomite. I did that, and let me tell you, the rest is history.
Okay, so you heard that. I want to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I'm glad you added that in for Rudy. That's why when I sent you that audio clip earlier, I wanted people to hear Rudy, because there's so much going on. Before I get into that, there's so much going on, you know, around the movie. You know, Dolomite is my name, but I want people to hear Rudy talk. So that's why I'm glad I took that from an on camera interview, and I gave you the audio clip. But anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You
cost me hell,
I'm
because
sorry.
I had to, like, I'm like, you cost me absolute hell because I had to upload and do all that, but carry on.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But, I'm joking. Come on. Tell us everything.
Well, that, once again, people don't know, Rudy was in the Army, you know, and once he got out of the Army, you know, he went to Cleveland, like you said, to Cleveland, Ohio, to be an entertainer. And he wrote all these songs, he performed, couldn't get no airplay because, unfortunately, because of the way it was set up, not for black folks to get no airplay, you know, back in those days. So he recorded about 50 songs, and they were great mm-hmm. songs. Rudy Astley was a great songwriter and singer and producer, and get no love, no place. So he, like, okay, next. And that's when he went to Cleveland and started being an entertainer, you know. And
mm-hmm.
he was dancing, doing the whole MC thing, doing that whole clean comedy thing. He had to do what he had to do because Rudy, like, I'm believing in myself. I'm going to make something happen. And he had some mild success, like he said, of doing that whole thing, you know. And it's a funny thing. Rudy, you know, was playing around being a psychic as Prince Dumar, you know, wearing his turban on his head, which is funny. I love the stories he used to tell me while we were on the road. I mean, we had a lot of time, you know, traveling on the road, and eating at restaurants and things like that. So he used to tell me all about, you know, his days before I was even born. So, and he told me how he had to make $8 a day. He would sometimes, you know, washing dishes and peeling potatoes at restaurants and things like that. And, you know, I'm hearing this over and over again, year in, year out, and I'm not really paying attention to that. I'm, like, listening. But, you know, it's like, okay, he's telling me his struggles, but I was young,
And I really love that you touched on something about the struggle, because I actually have another clip that I want you to comment on, and I'm going to set it up, because he talked about something about never using the N-word again, which... anyone that knows me, I hate that word. It's disgusting. So
let it roll.
He was always very real and very vulgar, but that was one word that he hated. And
well,
him and Richard Pryor actually got together and said they're not doing it anymore, right?
Yes.
It's so... We don't even talk about the fact that Rich Pryor married a white girl, but whatever, that's not important. So let's play this clip, and I want to hear your opinion about this.
I left Fort Smith, Arkansas when I was 17 years old. I went to Cleveland, Ohio. There I pursued a career as a singer, as a dancer, and I sung and did 50 songs that Don Randall has carried to our company in New York.
Okay, that clearly was not the clip. But you sent me an interview where he was talking about the fact that him and Richard Pryor refused to use the N-word. I can go back and find the clip. That wasn't it. I apologize for that. But I thought that was very important because he was this influenced all these rappers, all these people. I mean, we can go back. If you guys haven't seen the legend of Rudy Ray Moore, you need to go back and watch this because Eazy-E loved him, Too Short loved him. I mean, everyone. I think that was amazing that he said that. I'm going to go back and find that clip. But how did you feel about that in that word and how you stood for that?
Wow. Do you have the kind of time for me to really get into this?
We do.
Okay.
Get into it because it's important.
Okay. Well, using the N-word was a word designed to humiliate black people, to drag you down, and to just take you to beyond lower than dirt. And to use that word, in my opinion, into your record, movies, show, whatever, we're calling each other, some of us calling each other that, and others are laughing. We don't have to use it no more. We trick them. They're using it for us. And it's important for us to lift each other up and calling each other wonderful, beautiful, and great kings and queens and innovators, because that's who we really are. We create. We are some of the best athletes. We are some of the best dancers, writers, singers. And I mean, just in general, creating all the great things of our sisters and brothers created, just in general. That's just who we are. We could take basically nothing to make something out of it. And to constantly use the N-word for shock value, brotherly love, so to speak, casually or whatever, and that the reason.
Do you think that these young, like, do you think that this generation, when they say it to each other and they say like it's a term of endearment, do you think that they really understand what they're saying to each other?
Absolutely not, because if they knew what that word was, the last word of a lot of black people heard before they were probably hanged, shot, dragged, neck cut off, or whatever. That was probably the last word they heard. Die in. And why would you want to use something constantly, every day, all day, that was designed to take you down, to make you feel lower than dirt? No, they do not. To answer your question, no, they do not understand, because they're hearing it, and it's just passed on. Term of endearment, no. Back in the day in the 70s, we used to say, what's up, brother? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
What's going on?
Yeah.
You know, those are the words that we use, you know, back in those days before it was put on, you know, in today's circulation of comedy, TV shows, movie, records, whatever. But if you're going to do it, understand what you're doing and why. Don't jump on the bandwagon, because it wasn't designed to be a term of endearment. It was designed to take you down, to call you something lower than dirt. And it's not going to stop. And but just, it's like anything, have understanding. When you're doing something, just have some understanding. And at some point, it may slow down, it may go away, which will be great, but, you know, I'm a very optimistic person, but I doubt it. And but until brothers and sisters and these youngsters start to understand, we're more than the N-word. We're great people. And it takes my generation and older and maybe like a few years younger to start teaching these young brothers and sisters, and you know, to you know, step up and show, you know, show your greatest side, because we are great. That's the word should be said. Instead of using the N word, say you're wonderful or you're great. I know, you know, some people might say, you know, it sounds corny, whatever. But you know what? We can change. We can change anything if we just put some effort into it. And I think that word, along with other things we do to each other, other than that. And just start embracing one another and lifting each other up in our communities and do what Rudy did. He hired a community to film those movies, to record his records.
Yeah.
You know, his audience was people from the community that he put in the Dunbar Hotel, and they laughing and joking on cue and all of that. Rudy was hood. I'm telling y'all now, because I travel and been with this man. I know every move he made. Rudy was street in the hood. And he stood for that. He stood for the black man and the struggles and everything we went through. And that's one thing I loved about Rudy. At the time, I didn't understand when I was a lot younger. But as I grew older and traveled and, of course, matured, I started to understand what he was really about. Because there was years and years of him when we did some shows, if it was comedy or hip-hop shows or whatever, and Rudy would sit there and talk to fans, to people, regular people that was inspiring to be an actor, actress, or filmmaker, or rapper. And he would just talk to them, telling them, you know, giving them advice to do's and the don'ts and believing in yourself. And that's what he talked about a lot. I mean, Rudy talked about that a lot, about being strong and believing in yourself and don't give up, pull yourself from the bootstraps. I mean, I'm hearing it in my head right now because he said it so much, and I wasn't feeling it all the way like I am now, and that's the only thing that's a little bit saddening to me, is because Rudy's no longer here to, you know, get all this glory, you know, from this movie, and all the great things that everybody is saying about him. Because he's Rudy's name and legacy is in a whole different marketplace because of this movie. And a few weeks ago, you know, being on that red carpet and seeing all this media and all these major players and actors and the way Netflix really put this movie together, I mean, they really laid it out for Rudy. I got to give my hat off to Eddie Murphy and the crew, the writers, Larry and Scott, and Craig, the director, Craig Brewer, who directed this film. I mean, they all did a great job. I mean,
we need to get really into that because I know they. Let's get into the movie and let's get her done. You own the rights to everything, correct?
No, I own the rights to comedy and music audio catalog, the master recording and the publishing, and also his likeness to a degree, and rights to do. Documentary series, animation series, and other things, and merchandising, and partnership. Some of this stuff with his family. Some things I own outright.
I want to kind of touch on with the movie coming out and everything. where do you stand with all that? Like, because you have been there for him with his career to kind of resurrect it, I would say, honestly. Where do you stand with all that?
Well, where I stand with it, after Rudy's passing in 2008, I had a responsibility to keep Rudy's legacy, you know, around and alive, if you will. These are the things Rudy and I talked about when absolutely no one was around. He told me what to do. He told me what not to do. And that's why he handed over all the possessions over to me, because I took his career as a young man who didn't know nothing about management and brought his career back alive. Once he started getting sampled, I started collecting his money for him and then handed it to him. And I became good at that. And then I was working in an entertainment magazine at the time, and I would do a lot of press things to bring Rudy up. And this is very important. This is very, very important. I was at a what they call the Sprite Night event that BET used to do every year, and it was right before the Soul Train Awards. It was downtown Los Angeles, and it was Sprite Night. And everybody was there, you know, performing, doing the whole media press thing. And I didn't even know who Busta Rhymes was. I saw this guy with his big hat on. He was in the group, what's the name of that group? I can't think of it. But I just walked up to Busta Rhymes. They know nothing about this guy. I said, I represent Rudy Ray Moore, a.k.a. Dolemite. And he lost his mind. He jumped up and down and said, well, are you kidding me? He carried on literally for about 3 minutes how he loved Rudy Ray Moore. He just got signed to Elektra Records, and he was doing a solo album. He said, man, I want you guys to come in New York. I want him to be on my album. My managers, the label, and everybody's going to call you. And we exchanged information, and I thought that was going to be the end of it. I'm like, yeah, right. You know, exactly 30 days, probably, right after that, we're on our way to New York to record the first album, because we recorded two albums with Busta Rhymes. And he laid it out, him and his management team, the label, City of Rome, because he was signed to Elektra Records. He had everybody coming by, meeting with Rudy. It was great. And I saw that impact there, and it just went on and on and on. Well, we started doing more of live recording versus being sampled. And by him earning that right to be the godfather of rap is real, because like you said earlier, you're talking about Too Short, you're talking about Eazy-E, Too Live Crew. So everybody know, for those
I
who don't,
see everyone. Let's get into this really quick, because everyone thinks, which, like, everything from Snoop Dogg, everything from that comes from Parliament, and it comes from, you know, but no, they actually said, no, that's not where my music comes from. My music doesn't come from, you know, Parliament. It actually comes from Rudy Ray Moore. Like, that was the original.
The original, yeah, he's considered the original rapper, godfather rap. And once again, what I was about to say, him being sampled from the Too Live Crew on their first single that went gold, and beyond that, I'm sure. And that's where it started from. And it's like New York caught on to Rudy first. You know, Big Daddy Kane, Eric B. and Rakim, even Queen Latifah sampled Rudy. I mean, it goes on and on and on. New York embraces Rudy first, even though he was living in Los Angeles, you know, here in South Central. Then in the early 90s, that's when, you know, Eazy-E caught on, N.W.A. started sampling Rudy on their first, on their second album, they sample Rudy on his Straight Outta Compton album, and the song, and also with Lady Reed, they would loop him in their song. Then next thing you know, everybody is sampling and requesting. I'm just handling all these different sample deals. Some people want us to fly around where we can be actually in the studio. We're doing videos, movies. I mean, I was doing a lot of stuff for Rudy and without even knowing the hell what I was doing, but it was done. And I'm the first person that got this.
Let's,
but
you
I
know,
got
going
first,
on, we only have 20 minutes left, and we have a lot to get to.
Okay.
I want to try to play the sample. I hope it works, but I want to get into the fact that he was very adamant about the community. Very, very adamant, and in watching the documentary, he said that I would go and hire people that were homeless and give them a role.
Yes, he did.
You know, so, and he did. And I mean, what he did was very important, but I just want to get to all the clips, and I think this clip is about you, actually. So really quick, and we'll go play it, and we'll come right back.
I left Fort Smith, Arkansas, when I was 17 years old. I went to Cleveland, Ohio. There I pursued a career as a singer, as a dancer, and I sung and did 50 songs that Don Randall has carried to our company in New York.
Okay, so that was kind of his beginning, right?
Of the second time around, yes, correct. The second time around, when I was in Las Vegas, we were at a record show, and there was a company from New York called Norton Records. They came up to me and said they were big fans, and they would like to put out Rudy's early career, the career that he didn't hit in, that missed him. And I'm like, yeah. So I found Rudy somewhere in the party where we were, and I introduced him to Norton Records. And I think like 2 weeks later, they flew us out to New York. We met with the company, and we ended up making a deal with them right then and there over dinner. And they put this record out, a double album, and a single CD called The Hully Gully Fever. It was towards the late 90s. And that thing did very well for Rudy, and it brought back his career as a singer. I started booking him where he was doing singing with a live band, and he would do comedy in between the songs as well. So that's pretty much what he was talking about. And that sparked him to start record as a singer. In Rudy's last years, he was doing more singing, recording versus doing new jokes. Rudy would never... You know, this is a funny thing. Rudy liked the Signified Monkey, Dolomite, Petey Wheatstraw, and the Great Titanic. He didn't have to do any more new jokes. His joke—that's all people wanted to hear. So he went back into his roots, something that he missed. It was personal to him, of course.
Do you think that Rudy like was saying jokes or just telling the truth?
I mean, when it comes to the comedy, a lot of the stuff was other people's material. You know, he tells you a lot of the tales were what they call old school folklore tales. So some of that stuff was actually he would take it, polish it, like most people do when they cover someone else's material and make it his own. But he the one that made it hit. He the one that brought it to life. And it became who Rudy Ray Moore was, using these XXXX rated lyrics, rapping over music, and that's why he being a rapper, because he was not doing his jokes like most stand up comedians. You know, even though if they was in front of a crowd, you hear the laughter, but. Not many had music playing in the background. Rudy actually went in the studio and mixed his comedy and music together, and he made it work, and that's why he became, this rapper, if you will. That's the reason why
And I can't pull up right now that the vocal of him, but I do have the vocal of him talking about the fact that he did not like these new comedians, the way they dressed, the way they carried themselves, the way that they talked, and he very much mentioned Steve Harvey, which he always dressed in suits. So he kind of was a man with class, but at the same time, you see him on his album covers and he's butt naked. Well, so he was a man of kind of complex. He was very complex.
Yes, he was like some folks. But you have to understand that clip that you can't find that you're referring to. You're talking about older Ray Ray. You're talking about 2003 Rudy Ray Moore. We're not talking about '80s or '90s Rudy Ray Moore. He matured a lot. He understood. So that is not something that he done. That clip I gave you earlier is something. Is not, done in.
So are you saying that the 2000? Are you saying the 2000s Rudy Ray Moore would not have had naked bitches on his album cover?
Not to the degree. Not to the degree. you know what I mean? Because there's a record. There's actually a record. That we put out independently. When I got him signed over to Capitol EMI Records, he actually had women on with the big boobs and everything, but they were like actually covered, and he was like fully dressed, and they were fully dressed, but they're these watermelons are there. You know what I'm saying? So
the watermelons, is that what we're calling it?
Yes. I have to be yourself.
I have no watermelons, by the way. Let's just make that very clear.
Well, I have to be, respectful because that's who I am. But anyway, he changed. It's like a lot of people. You get older, you get seasons, you start standing for causes, you see things different. And that's pretty much, when he was on stage doing his live comedy, he was Rudy Ray Moore Dolomite. But in certain ways, if you look at Rudy's latest, a time before he died, he was wearing dashikis, he was wearing the African gear, he was wearing snakeskin. He matured and he changed, like most folks do. He could be coming, a senior citizen. You can't be senior citizen Dolomite on stage now.
You can't be senior citizen.
Well,
okay, so what do you think that changed? Because, let's be 100% honest. I knew who he was, but I didn't understand the impact that he had on Black history. And so when I started going back and watching the movies, and they had a story, undertone to him with the drugs, with the women, with all this, there was an undertone. He was really doing it to say, Black men don't do this. Women don't do drugs. He was really saying that. So what really changed about Dolomite? And then we got to get to your documentary.
Well, honestly, I think seeing Rudy change in front of my eyes over the years or whatever, I would say just age. And his health was starting to fail probably in the late, I would say it's like 98, his health, started to fail, like some of us, he was a diabetic, and I think he started looking at life differently as he got older and got sicker. I think that changed him. I think those combination of things changed Rudy. But at the same time, he could. Rudy was one of those people, as they say, riding until the wheels fall off. He literally did that to the very end. Because being on that stage was his energy. It was his thing to keep him alive. I saw that.
Yeah.
Rudy was one way before he went on stage. While he was on stage, he was a whole different person as an entertainer. When he was off stage, he was back being, like you said, complex and being who Rudy Ray Moore was in a whole different, you know, way or whatever. But once again, Rudy wanted the spotlight, so this is very important. He wanted the spotlight. He felt like he was unappreciated and everybody stole his act, and he talked about that. And that would be in my upcoming
documentary. Yes, and I feel like we didn't really get to that, so I feel like we should do a part two, because that's how complex he was, that there's so much to talk about with him. And, you know, he said that. He felt unappreciated. So we got 10 minutes left. I honestly want you to touch on that, please.
Okay. Well, you have to understand. You have to understand that. You talking about somebody felt like I started this. Rudy kind of reminded me, this is going to be funny to you in a way, probably. You know how Little Richard used to talk about, I started this and y'all ain't never gave me nothing? Rudy actually felt that way, too, when it comes to being this filmmaker that believed in himself. He did his own films. He did his own comedy records. And next thing you know, you got a new wave, a generation of comedians that you heard in that clip that I sent to you. And next time, we'll have them all lined up where we can have Rudy talk a lot more, because I think it's important for the people to hear, you know, the audio of Rudy talking, you know, and before, you know, we do the documentary that we're, you know, editing now. But anyway, he just felt like he contributed and done a lot for hip-hop, comedy, and filmmakers, and he was not really getting his just due in a way that he felt like he should have gotten. Even though I did my very best to go out there to market Rudy, to word of mouth, you know, just everywhere I went, I'm passing out a Rudy Ray Moore CD or a poster, bringing him up. I mean, I'm sure people want to tell me back, you know, when he was here. Well, that's all you talk about is Rudy Ray Moore, Dolomite, Rudy Ray Moore, Rudy Ray Moore.
I'm so glad that you said that, because I want to know where your dedication to him comes from. Like, why do you feel so loyal to him?
The reason why, because you have to understand, I'm a product of what they call South Central Los Angeles, the hood or whatever. And if I would have never started working with Rudy Ray Moore, who would have known where my life would have turned to or whatever? And by me learning how to be a professional entertainment manager and a media guy, I had a chance to tour, to travel. I mean, I've been a lot of places, year after year, and negotiating deals and coming up with strategies, talking to record labels and producers and directors, and start meeting people like the Snoop Dogs and Eazy-E. I mean, Eazy-E and I became friends, and Rudy, he would invite us out to personal appearances and do things with him, Too Short. I mean, come on, you guys know the list. And working, seeing that Dr. Dre sampled him on that Chronic album that took him to the moon and back, that's what really put Rudy out there, because that record did, you know, we talk about, what, 7-8 million and still counting, I'm sure. So by him being sampled all over again and reaching these new audience and start doing movies, then this movie started being sampled. You have to understand, Rudy's films started being sampled. That Old Dirty Bastard video, I Got Your Money, you know, unfortunately, ODB was locked up, so they had to make a video out of that song. So they took some foul footage of him, and they took the girl with Khalees and the Hook, and they took the Dolemite movie and basically made that music video. So it's like a whole new generation caught on to Rudy through hip hop in a major way. I mean, more so than I would say the comedy. It's definitely the hip hop, and it's still learning. You know, the last big sample we had was 2012 by Big Sean, where on the Hall of Fame album they licensed some stuff from us, and that record, you know, did very well, and they got a lot of airplay, and it sparked a whole nother generation after the traditional hip hop artists of the Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre, 2 Live Crew, and the West Coast, who embraced Rudy because he was living in Los Angeles before he moved to Las Vegas. So, how much more time do you have? Because we could be, we have.
Well, I mean, you got 5 minutes. I want to talk about what's next for you. You know, R.I.P. Rudy, and he's been an amazing landmark on hip hop. What's next for you, Donald? Where are you going with this?
Where I'm going? Well, for the last few years, I formed Dolemite Records, and I just formed a new label, Rudy Ray Moore Records, and it's about branding Rudy and making sure, because of the movie.
I honestly want to ask you this question. Why is it through Rudy that you're doing all this? So I know.
Well, because I mean, cause
and not through Donald.
Yeah, because the man left me the torch to carry on. You know, he left me his catalog and rights to do other things. I mean, I have to do this. You know, it's that old.
Okay.
No one else is going to do it. Until this movie, you know, came about, you know, no one was checking for Rudy. I was out there with the writers, Larry and Scott and Rachel Hutland. We shot this life story around, and it was not moving. And when they were going to do this movie with Eddie Murphy and with the writers and the producers, they were going to do it with DreamWorks back in the day, and it didn't happen. And Rudy passed away, and it died down, but it didn't die down with me, because I wanted his story to be told. It was very important for his story to be told, because this man done so much, once again, for hip-hop, comedy, and filmmakers. And it's kind of funny. I would like to kind of like, I'll talk about a little bit of this, but in the late 90s, Rudy audience changed from being the hood, being
he
black.
He said that. And you know what I thought about? Like, Paul Mooney is what I thought about when I heard that interview, what he said. Like, you know, because white people love Paul Mooney. And so he gave him that platform.
Yes, I was surprised when I saw the shift. And the shift really hit me when we were in, mostly in New York. That was mostly his audience.
Yeah, you got 90 seconds left. So wrap up your story, wrap up where everyone, like, how to see the movie. So, because you got 90 seconds, go, kill it.
Okay, it's in theaters right now, limited release. You can search in your town. Dolemite Is My Name, October the 25th, Netflix. And I'm telling you right now, you guys are going to love this movie. I love what Netflix did. I love what the writers did, what the director did. Eddie Murphy and the rest of the cast, you guys did an amazing job. And I appreciate everyone that opened and embraced me on the red carpet at the premiere there in Los Angeles. And it was a great experience, but it was a bittersweet and kind of sad. Because to me, only personally, because Rudy wasn't there to see this, and that's what he wanted, and he was not there. And I think about that right now. It's still kind of like bothering me that Rudy is not here to see what all these great people are talking about him all over YouTube, Instagram,
trust me,
and media.
He sees it. He sees it. He's shining down from heaven. And you know what? I'm going to have you back on the show in a couple weeks because we have a lot more to talk about. And this is so what's the point. We got to get out of here. I'm sorry to cut you short. I love you. I love you. I love
you. That's okay.
But we got to sign out.
Thank you, my sister.
And
okay, bye. See you later.
My brother.
All right.
So what's the point with Destiny Williams? I want to thank you guys for joining in, and we're signing off.
All right, peace.